the first said.
Good idea, Willemar said.
But first, you should tie them down better than they are. They already tried to run away on our way here. I took away the spears and knives I could find, but I might not have found them all. And someone should guard them overnight. Wolf can help,
Ayla said.
Yes, you are right. These are dangerous men,
De Morin said as he walked back toward the shelter.
The Zelindania can decide what to do, but they need to be stopped, whatever it takes.
Remember Ataroa, Jandalar?
Ayla said, both of them falling in beside the leader of the cave.
I'll never forget her. She nearly killed you. If it hadn't been for Wolf, she would have. She was vicious. I'd even say evil. Most people are decent. They're willing to help people, especially if they're in trouble. But there always seem to be a few who take what they want and hurt people and don't seem to care,
Jandalar said.
I think Balderan enjoys hurting people,
De Morin said.
So that's his name,
Jandalar said.
He always had a temper,
De Morin continued.
Even as a child, he liked to pick on those who were weaker, and inevitably, there were always a few boys who followed him and did what he said.
Why do some go along with people like that?
Ayla said.
Who knows, Jandalar said. Maybe they're afraid of them and think if they go along, they won't be the ones who are picked on. Or maybe they don't have much status, and making other people afraid makes them feel more important.
I think we need to select some people to watch them closely,
De Morin said,
and guard them in shifts so the watchers don't get sleepy.
They should also be searched again. Some of them may keep hidden knives that they can use to cut the ropes and perhaps hurt people,
Ayla said.
I'll take a shift, and as I said, Wolf can help. He's very good at guarding. It's like he sleeps with one eye open.
When they were searched, each of the men had hidden at least one knife, which they claimed were just eating knives. De Morin had been considering whether to untie their hands at night so they could sleep more comfortably, but finding the knives made him change his mind. They were given a meal and watched closely while they ate. Ayla collected their eating knives when they were through. Balderan did not want to give his up, but a signal to Wolf, which brought him to his feet with a menacing snarl, caused the man to let go of the sharp-edged tool. When she got close to him, she could see his seething anger. He could barely keep it under control. He had been able to exercise his free will for most of his life. He had taken what he wanted with impunity, including the lives of other people. Now he was physically restrained and forced to do something he didn't want to do, and he didn't like it. The visitors and most of the third cave of the Zelindanyi that watched over the most ancient sacred site followed a trail upstream beside the meandering river that had cut deep into the limestone, creating a deep gorge that now constrained the river. Ayla noticed that the people of the local cave began glancing at each other and smiling as though they shared a secret or were anticipating some amusing surprise. They rounded a sharp turn, and behind the high gorge walls, the visitors were astounded to see high above them a stone arch, a natural bridge spanning the river. The ones who had not seen it before stopped to gaze in wonder at the formation that had been created by the Great Earth Mother. They had never seen anything like it. No one had. It was unique.
"Does it have a name?" Ayla asked.
"It has many names," De Morin said. "Some people name it for the Mother, or for spirits of the next world. Some people think it looks something like a mammoth. We just call it the Arch, or the Bridge."
Some 400,000 years before, the force of a subterranean stream carved through the limestone, eventually wearing the calcium carbonate rock away, creating caves and passageways. In the course of time, the level of the water lowered and the land uplifted, and the conduit that had broached the wall of stone had become a natural arch. The present river flowed through what had been a barrier and was now a bridge across the river, but so high it was seldom used. The high stone arch spanning the river was an awe-inspiring formation. Nothing like it existed anywhere else. The top of the span was approximately on the same level as the top of the high cliffs closest to it, but the ancient channel had also carved out meanders nearer the river, which had become level ground. During the wet season, when the river was running high, the sides of the limestone barrier sometimes restricted the flow of the water and caused flooding. But most of the time, the river that had once created caves and worn its way through the limestone obstruction was placid and calm. The field between the stone shelter of the first cave of the Zelindanyi Watchers and the river had a circular shape enclosed by the cliff walls of the deep gorge. Many eons before, it had been the loop of an oxbow that was the former river bend, but was home to a meadow of mixed grasses, aromatic artemisia shrubs, and a plant whose edible green leaves resembled the feet of the ducks and geese that navigated the river waters in summer, goosefoot, and which bore multitudes of small black seeds which could also be ground between stones, then cooked and eaten. An area toward the back of the field had a shallow talus slope, whose sharp-edged stones were mixed with enough soil to feed the roots of cold-loving pine, birch, and juniper trees, often dwarfed into brush. Above the field, the dark evergreen of trees and brush growing on the slopes and plateaus of the cliff made a strong contrast with the white limestone of the cliff. It also formed hillocks and terraces that provided a place for the people to gather when someone wanted to impart information to a group. The first cave of the Zelindanyi that watches over the most ancient sacred site lived under a sheltering limestone ledge on a terrace above the floodplain. The Zelindania had gathered in the field below to hold their meeting. The arrival of the visitors and the members of the third cave of sacred site watchers created quite a stir. The Zelindania had set up a pavilion of sorts, a tent-like structure with a roof, but only partial sides. The roof offered shade from the sun, and the side walls blocked the wind blowing down the gorge. One of the acolytes had seen the approaching procession and rushed in, interrupting the meeting. A couple of the leading Zelindania were annoyed for a moment until they turned to look. Then they felt a frisson of fear, which they tried not to show. Ayla, riding Winnie, was in the lead. The first told her to ride up to the meeting tent, which she did. Then she moved her leg over and slid down and went to assist the first to step off the pole drag. The first had a way of walking that was neither fast nor slow, but carried great authority. The two southern leaders immediately recognized the symbolism of her facial tattoos, clothing, and necklaces, and could hardly believe that the first among those who served the Great Earth Mother had come to their gathering. They had seen her so seldom that she was almost a mythical figure. They gave lip service to her existence, but thought themselves to be among the highest ranking of the Zelindania, and they had selected a first of their own. To actually see her was a little overwhelming, but to see the manner of her arrival was even more so. The control of horses was unprecedented. She had to be extraordinarily powerful. They approached with deference, greeted her with both hands extended, and welcomed her. She returned the greetings, and then proceeded to introduce several of her traveling companions, Ayla and Jonicle, Willemar and Jondalar, and then the rest of the travelers, with Willemar's assistance and the children last. Damoran greeted the two most important of their Zelindania, the man who was the Zelindani of his cave, and the woman who was the Zelindani of the first cave of sacred site watchers. Ayla had told John Ayla to keep Wolf out of sight, but after all the formal introductions were over, she and the child brought him out, and she saw another look of shock and fear. After persuading them to let her introduce them to the wolf, there was a little less fear, but some apprehension lingered. By this time, the people from the first cave had come down to the field from their living site on the side of the cliff. But Ayla was glad that formal introductions were held off until later. The four men they were bringing for the Zelandania to deal with had been held back with the people from the third cave of Watchers until after all the formalities were over. But now, De Morin brought them forward. He approached his Zelandani.
"You know the men who have been causing so much trouble, stealing and forcing women and killing people?" he asked. "Yes," the man replied. "We have just been talking about them." "Well, we have them," De Morin said, and signaled some men who had been designated to watch them. They were brought forward. The woman who had accused them of killing her mate and harming her came with them. "This one's name is Balderan. He is their leader." All the Zelandania looked at the four men whose hands were tied together. They noted the unkempt look of the men, but the woman Zelandani of the first cave wanted something more than appearance upon which to judge them.
"How do you know they are the ones?"
the woman Zelandani asked.
"Because I was the one who was forced after they killed my mate," the woman said.
"And you are?"
"I am Aramina of the third cave of the Zelandani that watches over the most ancient sacred site," she said.
"What she says is true," the male Zelandani of the third cave of Watchers said. "She was pregnant at the time and also lost her baby."
He turned to De Morin. "We have been talking about them, and we're trying to think of a plan to find them. How did you catch them?"
"It was the first acolyte," De Morin said. "They tried to attack her, but didn't understand who she is."
"Who is she,
besides the first acolyte?" the Zelandani of the first cave of Watchers said.
De Morin turned to Willemar.
"Why don't you explain?"
"Well," Willemar said, "I wasn't there, so I can only tell you what I was told, but I believe it. I know that Ayla is an extremely skilled hunter with both a stone-slinging weapon and a spear-throwing weapon, which was devised by her mate, Jondalar. She's also the one who controls the wolf and the horses, although her mate and child also do. Apparently, when these men tried to attack her, she bruised them with stones, although she can kill with stones if she chooses. Then Jondalar came with his spear-thrower. When one of them tried to run away, she sent the wolf to stop him. I've seen them work together hunting. Those men didn't have a chance."
"All the visitors use the spear-throwing weapon. Jondalar has promised to show us how, and when they went hunting, they were too lucky," De Morin continued. "Each one brought down a bison. They killed 9 of them. That's a lot of meat. Bison are big animals. That's why we're bringing you a large load of meat for your first cave and for your Zelandania meeting. As for these men, once they were caught, we weren't sure what to do with them. Aramina thought they should be killed, since they killed her mate. Perhaps she's right. But we didn't know who should do the killing, or how. We all know how to kill animals that the Great Mother has given us so that we can live. But the mother does not condone killing people. I didn't know if we should be the ones to kill them. It may bring bad luck to our cave if we do, or if we didn't do it correctly. We thought the Zelandania should decide, so we brought them here."
"I think that was wise, don't you?" the first among those who served said. "It's fortunate that you are having a meeting, so that all of you can discuss it and come to a decision. She's letting them know that she doesn't plan to take over just because she's the first," Ayla thought, "but she will be interested in what they do."
"I certainly hope you will be staying and will offer your counsel," said the Zelandani of the first cave of Sacred Site Watchers. "Thank you. I would like that. This is not an easy problem to work out. We are here because I am taking my acolyte on her Danyar tour.
I hope someone will be able to guide us through your sacred site. I have seen it only once before, but I have never forgotten it. Not only is it the most ancient, it is unbelievably beautiful, both the cave itself and the images that have been painted on the walls. They honor the Great Mother, the first said, with feeling that conveyed her conviction.
Of course, we have a watcher at the sacred site who will be happy to guide you through it, the woman said. But now, let's see these men.
As the four men were brought forward, they were trying to resist, but Wolf was guarding them and herded Balduran back with snarls and nips to his ankles and legs when he tried to leave. It was obvious that Balduran was seething with rage. He particularly hated the foreign man and woman who could control horses and a wolf, and could therefore control him. For the first time in his life, he was afraid, and what he feared most was Wolf. He wanted to kill the animal, but not any more than Wolf wanted to kill him. The four-legged hunter knew in the way that animals with senses more developed than those of humans know that this man was not like other men. He was born with too much or not enough of something that made him different, and Wolf innately knew that this man would not hesitate to harm the ones Wolf loved. By now, everyone from both caves and all the neighboring Zelandania had gathered in the field in front of the cliffs, and when the men were brought forward, it caused quite a disturbance. Several people recognized Balduran, and some shouted out accusations.
"He's the one," a woman said. "He forced me. They all did.
They stole my meat from me that I had spread out to dry.
He took my daughter and kept her for nearly a moon. I don't know what they did to her, but she was never right again and died the next winter. As far as I'm concerned, he killed her."
A middle-aged man came forward.
"I can tell you about him. He was born to my cave before I moved away," he said.
"I would like to hear what this man has to say," the first said.
"So would I," the Zelandani from the third cave of watchers said.
"Balduran was born to a woman who had no mate, and at first everyone was pleased that she had a son who seemed sound and healthy, a son that could one day make a contribution to the cave. But from quite a young age, he was uncontrollable. He was a strong boy, but he used his strength to take what he wanted whenever he wanted it. In the beginning, his mother made excuses for him. Since she had no mate, she hoped her strong son, who quickly became a very good hunter because he liked killing things, would take care of her as she grew older. But eventually, she came to recognize that he didn't care about her any more than anyone else," the man began. "By the time he reached young manhood, all the people of the cave were angry and afraid of him. It came to a head when he took some spears from a man who had made them for himself. When the man objected and tried to take them back, Balduran beat him so badly he nearly died. I don't think he ever fully recovered. That was when everyone banded together and told him he had to leave. All the rest of the men and most of the women armed themselves and chased him away. Two friends left with him, young men who admired him for taking what he wanted and not having to work for anything. One of them returned before the summer was over and begged to be allowed to come back, but Balduran always managed to acquire a few followers. He would go to a summer meeting, settle into a falage, and challenge the other young men into reckless acts of danger to prove their manhood. He always bullied any that seemed weak or afraid, and when he left, he always had a few new followers, charmed by his troublemaking ways. They would harass some new caves until they finally got together to go looking for them. Then Balduran and his friends would travel some distance away and find other caves from whom they could steal food, clothing, implements, weapons, and before long, women they could force." Balduran sneered while the man related the story. He didn't care what anyone said about him.
It was all true, anyway, but he had never been caught before, and he didn't like it. Ayla observed him closely and saw that he was more than angry. She could see his fear and his hatred, and she was sure Wolf could smell it. She knew if Balderan made any attempt to hurt her or John Ayla or Jandalar or any of the people traveling with them, Wolf would kill him. She knew that if she merely gave Wolf the signal to kill the man, he would, and the people would probably be grateful. But she didn't want Wolf to be the one to solve their problem, and she didn't want Wolf to be known as a killer. Stories tended to grow out of proportion. Everyone knew wolves could kill. The fact that he helped to catch the man and that he guarded the man and didn't kill him, that was the story she wanted people to tell about Wolf. The people needed to deal with Balderan themselves, and she was curious to see what they would do. The other men with him weren't angry. They were just scared. They knew what they had done, and there were enough people here who knew it too. The man standing beside Balderan was thinking about the predicament he was in. It always seemed so easy following him, taking whatever they wanted and frightening people. Of course, Balderan scared him, too, sometimes, but it made him feel important to see people afraid of him. And when they saw that people who came after them were close and determined and felt it was time to move on, they were nimble and quick, could always get away. They were sure they would never get caught, but the foreign woman with her weapons and her animals had changed that. There was no doubt that she was a Zelandani, and they should never have gone after one who serves the mother. But how could they have known? She wasn't even tattooed. They said she was an acolyte, but an acolyte to the First? He didn't know the First really existed. He thought she was just a story like the elder legends. But now the most powerful Zelandani on Earth was here, with her acolyte, who had magic control of animals and had caught him. What were they going to do to him? As though hearing his thoughts, one of the Zelandanias said, "Now that they're here, what are we going to do with them?" "For now we have to feed them, find a place to keep them, and get some people to watch them until a decision can be made," the First said, then turned to the woman who was the Zelandani of the First Cave of Ancient Sacred Cave Watchers. "And perhaps you should divide out this bison meat." She smiled at the First, acknowledging that she had turned over authority to her, as though she knew that she was the first in this region, although no one had told her. The woman called some names and delegated the responsibility to the leaders of the two caves to decide how the meat should be parceled out, but assigning several other Zelandania to supervise the actual work of skinning and butchering the beasts. Some had already been skinned, and they started cutting up that meat for their evening meal. Others were taking Balderan and his men toward the cliff. Once he was in their hands, Ayla whistled Wolf to her and went to help Jandalar unhitch the pole drags from the horses. She had seen a nice grassy area away from the people, but decided to ask if there was any reason she shouldn't use it for the horses. It was always a good idea not to make assumptions about the territory of other caves. She first asked Damoran, the leader of Amalana's cave.
"We didn't have a summer meeting here this year, so I think it just hasn't been trampled. But you might ask the Zelandani First if you want to make sure," he said.
"Zelandani First?" Ayla said. "Do you mean of the First Cave of the Watchers?"
"Yes, but that is not the reason she is called Zelandani First. It's because she is our First," he said. "It is only coincidence that she happens to be the Zelandani of that cave. Which reminds me, I should also tell her that I sent a runner to tell one or two other caves that Balderan has been caught. They were troubled more than most by him. A few more people may come."
Ayla frowned and wondered how many other caves would do the same. Maybe she should look for a more secluded spot, or perhaps make a fenced area for the horses the way she did at their summer meetings.
She decided to talk to Jandalar about it after she talked to Zelandani first. Ayla and Jandalar talked to the rest of the travelers, and they decided to look for a choice spot to set up their camp, the way most caves did when they arrived early at a summer meeting. The first agreed with Ayla's intuition that there might be more people coming than anyone expected. That evening, although meals were cooked by the families or groups that normally ate together, they all more or less sat together, rather like a feast. Balderan and his henchmen were given food, and their hands were untied so they could eat it. They spoke quietly to each other as they ate. There were several people watching them, but it was hard to maintain interest when there was nothing to watch except people eating their food. The night sky darkened as the meal progressed, and people who were friendly strangers were interested in getting to know each other. Ayla and Jandalar left Wolf with John Ayla to give him a rest from his stressful vigilance and went for a walk together toward the Zelandania dwelling. The first had gone there to talk about making a special tour of the sacred cave with Ayla, Jonacol, and a few others, and another tour with the rest of the visitors, except for the children, that might not be as extensive. The couple knew in general where the men they had captured were being held, but in the dark they didn't notice how carefully they were being watched by them. Balderan had been watching the tall man who was the mate of the woman acolyte, and as they approached, Balderan spoke to his men.
"We have to get away from here," he said. "If we don't, we won't live to see many more days."
"But how?"
one of the men said. "We need to get rid of that woman who controls the wolf," Balderan said. "That wolf won't let us get close to her. Only when he's around. He isn't always with her. Sometimes he stays with a girl," Balderan said.
"But what about that man that's always around her? The visitor she came with? He's big.
I've known men like him, tall and muscular, but too calm and mild. Have you ever seen him angry? I think he's one of those gentle giants who are so afraid they'll hurt someone they even avoid arguments. If we're quick, we can grab her before he knows it and threaten to kill her if he makes a move. I don't think he'll take a chance that she might get hurt. By the time he thinks about it, it will be too late. We'll be gone, and her with us."
"What are you going to threaten her with? They've taken our knives."
Balderan smiled, then loosened the leather thong that laced his shirt closed.
"This," he said, pulling the thong out of its holes. "I'll wrap this around her neck."
"But what if your plan doesn't work?" another man asked.
"We won't be any worse off than we are now. We've got nothing to lose."
The next day, one of the other caves in the region arrived, and by evening, two more. The first came to see Ayla the morning of the following day. Jandalar stepped out to let them talk in private.
"We are going to have to think about how to deal with these men."
"Why do we have to?" Ayla said. "We don't live here."
"But you caught him. You're involved, whether you want to be or not. It could be the mother wants you to be,"
the first added. Ayla gave her a look of skepticism.
"Well, maybe not the mother, but the people here want you to be, and I think you should. Besides, we need to talk to them about your tour of their sacred site. You will be amazed at this cave. I've seen it once, and I know I'm going back in. There are some difficult places, but I'll never get another chance, and I won't miss it," the first said.
That intrigued Ayla and aroused her curiosity. All the walking on this journey seemed to have improved the woman's health, but she still had problems and needed help when they got into rough terrain. She was a more than ample woman in spite of all her walking. She carried her weight with grace and assurance, and in many ways it added to her stature, but it could make moving around in tight places with uneven footing difficult.
"You're right, Zelandani, but I don't want to make decisions about him. I don't think it's my place," Ayla said.
You don't have to. We all know what has to be done. He needs to be killed. If he isn't, he will kill more people. The question is, who will do it and how? Deliberately killing someone is not easy for most people. It's not supposed to be. It's not right for people to kill people. That's why we know he's not right inside. He doesn't know that. And that's why I'm glad all these caves are coming together. It needs to be something they all participate in. I don't mean everyone has to kill him, but they all have to take responsibility for it, and they all have to know that it's the right thing to do in this particular case. A person shouldn't be killed out of anger or for revenge. There are other ways to deal with those things. There is no other way where he's concerned, the first said. But what is the best way to do it? They were both silent. Then Ayla said, "There are plants." "I was going to say mushrooms," the first said. "They could be fed a meal with certain mushrooms."
"But what if they guess and decide not to eat them? Everyone knows there are poisonous mushrooms. They are easy to pick out and avoid," Ayla said.
"That's true. And while Balderan is not right, he's not stupid. What plants were you thinking of?"
"There are two plants that I know grow around here because I've seen them. One is called water parsnip. It grows in water," Ayla said.
"They are edible, especially the roots, when they are young and tender," the first said.
"But there is another plant that looks very similar, and it's deadly poisonous," Ayla said. "I know the word in Mamutoi. I don't know what you call it, but I know it."
"I know the plant. It's poison hemlock," the first said. "That's our name for it. It also grows in water. So the same meal can be cooked for the whole camp. Everyone else will get water parsnip, but Balderan and his men will get hemlock." She paused, then said, "I was thinking they could be served mushrooms, too. Edible mushrooms. They may think they are poison and avoid them, and perhaps won't pay attention to the root vegetables, because it will look as though everybody is eating them."
"That's what I was thinking, unless someone can think of a better way," Ayla said.
The woman stopped to think again, then nodded.
"Good. We have a plan. It's always good to have a plan, to anticipate if you can," said the Zelandani who was first.
When the two women left the tent, no one was outside. The rest of their group of travelers had gone to see what was happening with the impromptu summer meeting and to offer to help with the cooking or whatever needed doing. Except this wasn't a happy coming together of relatives, friends, and neighbors. This was a gathering to pass judgment for serious crimes. More people were arriving, and the field below the cliff was filling up. But the biggest surprise was late in the afternoon. Ayla and the first were in the Zelandania dwelling when John Ayla came running in, interrupting the meeting.
"Mother, mother," she said, "Kimmeran told me to come and tell you."
"Tell me what, John Ayla?"
Ayla said with a stern tone to her voice.
"Belladora's family is here, and there's a strange person with them."
"Belladora's family? They aren't even Zelandani. They're Giornadani. They live far away. How could they have gotten here in just a day or so?" Ayla said.
She turned to the others.
"I think I have to go."
"I should go with you," the first said.
"Please excuse us."
"They don't live that far,"
Zelandani first said, walking them out.
"And they often come to visit, at least every couple of years. I think they are as much Zelandani as they are Giornadani, but I doubt if they came because of the runners that were sent out. They were probably planning to visit anyway. They were likely as surprised to see their relative as she was to see them."
Kimmeran was just outside and had heard Zelandani first.
"That's not entirely true," he said. "They went to the Giornadani summer meeting, then decided to go to your summer meeting, and were planning on coming here later. They were at the meeting camp when the runner arrived, and they found out from him that we were here. Of course, they also found out about Balderan. Did you know that he has caused trouble for some of the Giornadanyi caves? Is there anybody he hasn't harmed and alienated?
There will be a meeting about that soon, Zelandani first said. We have to come to some kind of decision shortly.
As an afterthought, she said, Did you say there was a strange person with them? Yes, but you will see for yourself. Ayla and the First were presented to Belladora's relatives with full formal introductions. Then the First asked if they had set up their camp yet.
No, we just arrived, said the woman they had just learned was Belladora's mother, Ginadora.
Even without the introduction, it would have been obvious. She was an older, slightly plumper version of the woman they knew.
I think there may be room near our camp, the First said. Why don't we go claim it before someone else does?
When they reached the camp, there were more introductions and some initial hesitation about the animals, but then Ginadora saw a boy who looked as though he could have been born to her. She gave her daughter a questioning look. Belladora took her son's hand, and then her blonde, blue-eyed daughter's hand.
Come and meet your grandma, she said. You had two born together? They are both yours and both healthy? She said.
Belladora nodded.
That's wonderful, she said. This is Gianarin, the young mother said, holding up the hand of a 5-year boy with the dark brown hair and brownish-green eyes like his mother.
He's going to be tall, like Kimaren, Ginadora said.
And this is Ginadella,
Belladora said, holding up the hand of her fair daughter.
She has Kimaren's coloring, and she's a beauty, the woman said. Are they shy? Will they come and give me hug? Go and greet your grandma. We've come a long way to meet her, Belladora said, urging them forward.
The woman got down on her knees and opened out her arms. Her eyes were feeling full and looked shiny. Somewhat reluctantly, the children gave her a cursory hug. She took one in each arm as a tear rolled down her cheek.
I didn't know I had grandchildren. That's the trouble with you living so far away, Ginadora said. How long are you staying here?
We don't know yet, Belladora said.
Are you coming to our cave? Ginadora asked.
We had planned to, she said.
You've got to do more than visit for a few days. You've traveled this far. Come back with us and stay for a year, the woman said.
That's something we would have to think about, Belladora said. Kimaren is the leader of our cave. It would be hard for him to stay away for a year.
When she saw tears starting in her mother's eyes, she added,
But we'll think about it.
Ayla glanced around at the other people who were beginning to set up camp. She noticed a man who was carrying someone on his shoulders. He bent down and helped the person off. At first, she thought it was a child. Then she looked again. It was a small person, but oddly shaped, with legs and arms too short. She tapped the First and moved her chin in the direction of the person. The large woman looked, then looked more closely. She understood why Ayla had called her attention to the individual. She had never seen one, but she had heard about similar little people.
No wonder Belladora's mother seemed so relieved that her daughter's children, born at the same time, were normal. That person is an accident of birth, like some dwarf trees whose growth becomes stunted. I think that is a dwarf person, she said.
I would like to meet that person to learn more, but I don't want to make an issue of it. It would be like staring, and I think that person gets stared at enough, Ayla said.
Chapter 26 Ayla had gotten up very early and gathered her collecting baskets and the panniers for Winnie. She told Jondalar that she was going to look for some greens and roots and whatever else she could find for tonight's feast,
but she seemed distracted and uncomfortable.
"Would you like me to come along?"
he asked.
"No."
Her answer was sharp and abrupt, and then she tried to soften it.
"I was hoping you would watch Janela. Belladora is taking her children to spend some time with her mother this morning. John de Cam and Lavila are also going, and taking John Levin with them, because they are all related. I don't know what Kimmeran is doing, but I think he may join them later. Janela is like family, but she is really just a friend, and may feel left out because she won't have her usual friends to play with. I thought maybe you and Racer could go for a ride with her and Gray this morning."
"That's a good idea. We haven't been riding for a while. The exercise would do the horses good,"
Jondalar said. Ayla smiled at him and rubbed cheeks, but a frown still creased her forehead. She looked unhappy. It was barely daylight when Ayla left, riding Winnie and whistling for Wolf. She rode along the riverbank, looking over the vegetation. She knew the plants she was looking for grew near the place where they had camped, but she hoped she wouldn't have to ride that far. She rode past the third cave's location. It was deserted. Everyone was at the meeting that had spontaneously come about at the first cave. She wondered how Amelana was doing and if she would have her baby before they left. It could be any time now, she thought, and fervently hoped it would be a normal, healthy, happy baby. She didn't find what she was looking for until she was close to their former campsite. It was the back water of the river that had almost formed an oxbow lake that created the right kind of habitat for both water parsnip and water hemlock. She halted the horse and quickly slid off. Wolf seemed happy to have her to himself for a change and was a little frisky, but Ayla was in no mood for playfulness, so he began exploring the interesting smells coming from the small holes and hummocks. She had her good sharp knife and a digging stick with her, and first collected heaps of water parsnips. Then, in another basket, and with a new tool she had fashioned explicitly for the purpose, she dug up several roots and plants of the water hemlock. She wrapped them with long stems of grass and put them in a separate basket, again made expressly for the plants. She left it on the ground while she packed the parsnips in the panniers fastened to Winnie, then attached the separate basket on top. Then, whistling for Wolf, she started back upstream. She was in a hurry to return. When she came to a place where the river flowed fresh and clean, she stopped to fill her water bag. Then she saw the dry bed of a seasonal tributary stream that would be full of rushing water when rains came. The smooth, rounded stones on the bottom were perfect, and she carefully selected several of them to refill the pouch of stones for her sling. She was near a stand of pines and noticed small mounds pushing up under a layer of needles and twigs beneath the trees and brushed them aside. She found a clump of pinkish, buff mushrooms hidden underneath. She searched and found more, until she had collected quite a nice little pile of pine mushrooms. These were good mushrooms, white and firm of flesh, with a rather nice, slightly spicy smell and taste. But not everyone knew them. She filled a third gathering basket with them. Then she mounted Winnie, whistled for Wolf, and rode back, pushing her mare to a gallop for part of the distance. People were in the midst of preparing or eating their morning meal when she arrived. She went straight to the Zelandania pavilion and brought in two of the baskets. Only the two firsts were there.
"Did you find what you were looking for?"
the one who was first asked.
"Yes," Ayla said. "Here are some good pine mushrooms with a somewhat unusual flavor that I like very well," she said.
Then, showing them the basket of water hemlock, she said, "I have never tasted these."
"That's good. I hope you never do," the large woman said.
"Outside on Winnie's pannier is a big load of water parsnips. I was careful not to mix them," Ayla said.
"I'll give them to one of the people who is cooking,"
the taller, thinner Zelandani first said. If they are not cooked well, they can be unpalatable. She studied Ayla a while. This is uncomfortable for you, isn't it?
Yes, I have never deliberately collected something that I knew was harmful, especially knowing that it is intended to be given to someone to kill him,
Ayla said. But you know, if he is allowed to live, he will only cause more harm.
Yes, I know, but it still doesn't make me feel good about it.
And it shouldn't, her first said. You are helping your people and taking the onus on yourself. It's a sacrifice, but sometimes it's what a Zelandani must do.
I will make sure they go to the ones who should eat them,
Zelandani first said. It is the sacrifice I must make. These are my people, and he has hurt them long enough.
What about his other men? The first asked.
One of them, Gehenar, is asking what he can do to make reparations. He is saying how sorry he is,
Zelandani first said. I don't know if he is just trying to talk his way out of the punishment he knows is coming, or if he means it.
I think I will let the mother decide. If he ends up not eating the root and lives, I will let him go. If Balderan doesn't eat it and lives, I have already spoken with several people who have been personally harmed by him and are eager to see him pay. Most have lost family members or have been attacked themselves. If necessary, I will turn him over to them. But I would prefer it if this more subtle approach works.
When Zelandani first went to pick up the basket of hemlock, she saw a slithering movement under the container. She quickly snatched the basket and moved it aside. Underneath was a snake, an extraordinary snake.
Look at that, the woman said.
Ayla and the first looked. Then both took a small, indrawn breath of surprise. It was a small snake, probably quite young, and the red stripes running the length of its body indicated it was a non-poisonous type. But near the front of the body, the stripes split into the shape of a Y. The snake had two heads. Both tongues slipped in and out of its mouth, sampling the air. Then it started to move, but the movement was a bit erratic, as though it couldn't quite decide which way to go.
Quick, get something to catch it before it gets away, the first said.
Ayla found a small, watertight, woven bowl.
Is this all right to use?
She asked Zelandani first.
Yes, that's fine, she said.
The snake started moving as Ayla approached, but she turned the basket upside down and clamped it over the snake. It pulled its own tail in as she held it down firmly so it couldn't get out under the edge.
Now what do we do?
Zelandani first said.
Do you have something flat that I can slip under that?
Ayla asked.
I don't know. Maybe the edge of a shovel that's been ground flat. Would that work? Like this one?
She picked up the shovel that was used to clean ashes out of the hearth.
Yes, that's perfect, Ayla said.
She took the shovel and slid the flat part under the basket, then picked them both up and held them together while she flipped them over.
Is there a lid for this bowl and some twine to tie it on?
Zelandani first found a small, shallow bowl and gave it to Ayla, who set the bowl with the snake down, removed the shovel and pressed the shallow bowl on top, then tied them together. The three women left together to have a morning meal. They planned that the meeting should start when the sun was highest in the sky, but people started gathering on the slope earlier to find seating and standing places with enough elevation so they could see and hear better. Although everyone knew this was a serious meeting, there was still a feeling of celebration and festivity in the air, mostly because of the sociability of being together, especially since it was unplanned, and because people were glad that the vicious troublemaker had been caught. By the time the sun was high, the meeting area was filled to overflowing. Zelandani first started the meeting and began by welcoming the first among those who serve the Great Earth Mother and the rest of the visitors. She explained that the first was accompanying her acolyte and her former acolyte, who was now a Zelandani on their Donyer tour, and had come to see the most ancient sacred site. She also mentioned that the first's acolyte and her mate had captured Balderan and three of his men when they tried to attack her. That information brought an undercurrent of voices from the audience.
"That is the main reason we called this gathering. Balderan has caused pain and suffering to many of you for many years, but now that we have him, we have to decide what to do with him. Whatever punishment we mete out to him should be something we all feel is appropriate,"
Zelandani first said. Someone in the audience said, "Kill him," in a loud whisper that everyone heard, including the Zelandania. The one who was first responded,
"That may well be the appropriate punishment, but who will do it and how is the question. It could be very unlucky if it is not handled properly,"
the large woman said, "for all of us.
The mother has declared strong prohibitions against people killing other people, except in extraordinary circumstances. In an effort to find a solution for coping with Balderan, we don't want to become what he is."
"How did she catch him?"
someone asked.
"You should ask her," the first said, turning to Ayla.
This kind of situation always made her nervous, but she took a deep breath and tried to answer the question.
"I have been a hunter since I was very young, and the weapon I first learned to use was a stone hurled with a sling," she began.
For those who had not heard her speak before, her accent was a surprise. It was rare for a foreigner to become part of the Zelandania, and she had to wait until people quieted down before she could continue.
"Now, you know, I was not born a Zelandani," she said with a smile.
Her comment brought a small chuckle from the audience.
"I was raised far to the east of here, and I met Jandalar when he was on his journey."
People were settling down, getting ready to listen to what could be a very good story.
"When Balderan and his men first saw me, I had gone behind the trees for some privacy, and when I stood up to pull my leggings back on, they were staring at me. It made me angry that they were so impolite, and I told them so. Not that it did any good."
That brought a few chuckles from the group.
"I usually keep my sling wrapped around my head. It is an easy way to carry it. When he came after me, I don't think Balderan understood that it was a weapon as I began to unwind it."
She unwound her sling as she was talking, then reached into her pouch and took out two of the stones she had collected from the dry stream bed near their former camp earlier. She put the two ends of the sling together and placed a stone in the middle of a leather strap in a pocket that had formed from use. She had already selected a target, a varying hair in its brown summer coat, sitting off to the side on a rock next to its hole. At the last minute, she also spied a pair of mallards which had taken off from their nests near the river. With swift, sure movements, she flung the first stone and then the second. People spoke out their surprise.
"Did you see that?"
"She killed that duck right out of the sky."
"She killed a rabbit, too."
The demonstration gave them a sense of her skill.
"I didn't want to kill Balderan," Ayla said.
"But she could have,"
Jonicole interjected, which brought another murmur of voices.
"I only wanted to stop him, so I aimed for his thigh. I think he may have a good bruise to show for it. I hit the other man on the arm."
She whistled for Wolf, who came immediately at her call. That also brought a flurry of comments from the assembled group.
"Balderan and the others didn't notice Wolf at first. This Wolf is my friend, and he will do what I ask him to. When a third man tried to run away, I told Wolf to stop him. He didn't attack him or try to kill him. He bit at the man's ankle and tripped him. Then Jandalar came around the trees with his spear thrower. As we were bringing those men here, Baldoran tried to run away. Jandalar used his spear thrower to cast a spear. It just missed Baldoran's ear, so he stopped, Ayla said. Jandalar is very accurate with a spear thrower.
Again there were chuckles.
I told you they didn't stand a chance,
Willemar said to Damoran, who was standing next to him. They were taking a turn at guarding Baldoran and the others, who also heard everything that was said. When I saw how these men behaved toward me, I thought they were probably troublemakers. That's why we brought them with us, though they did not want to come. It was only after we arrived at the third cave of Watchers that we understood how much trouble they had caused over the years, Ayla said. She paused, looking down. It seemed obvious that she had more to say. I am a healer, a medicine woman. I have helped many women give birth. Fortunately, most babies are perfectly healthy when they are born, but some children of the mother are not born right. I have seen some that are not. Usually, if the problem is serious, they don't survive. The mother takes them back because only she can fix them. But some have a strong will to live. Even with serious problems, they live and often give much to their people, Ayla said. I was raised by a man who was a great Mogur. That is the word the people of the clan use for Zelandani. He had only one usable arm and walked with a limp, a problem from birth, and he had only one eye, and his weak arm was further damaged when a cave bear chose him and became his totem. He was a very wise man who served his people and was very well respected. There is also a boy who lives not far from our cave, who was born with a deformed arm. His mother was afraid that he would never be able to hunt and perhaps never become a real man. But he learned to use the spear thrower with his good arm, became a good hunter and gained respect, and now has a fine young woman as his mate. When a child is born dead or leaves this world and walks the next soon after birth, it is because the only way a person who is not born right can be fixed is to return to the mother, so she takes them back, although it is much easier to say than to do. One should not grieve for such children. The mother has taken them back so they can be made right. Ayla reached into a haversack she wore over one shoulder and took out a small bowl with a lid. She opened it and held up the two-headed snake. There were startled oohs. Some things are not right when they are born, and it is obvious. The tongues flicked out of the mouths of both heads as she showed the little creature. The only way this snake can be fixed is to return it to the mother. Sometimes that is what should be done. But sometimes someone is born wrong, and it is not obvious. When you look at them, they seem normal, but they are not right inside. Just like this little snake, the only way they can be fixed is to return them to the mother. Only she can fix them.
Baldoran and his men were also listening to Ayla's story.
We are going to have to watch for our chance soon if we're going to get away from here,
Baldoran said under his breath. He had no desire to be returned to the mother. For the first time in his life, he began to feel the fear he had so often caused others to feel.
I think that was a very appropriate way to talk about what needs to be done, Zelandani first said, as she was walking back to the Zelandania pavilion along with the first, Ayla and Jonacle.
Wolf was sedately following Ayla as she had signaled. She wanted people to know that while he was an efficient four-legged hunter, unlike Baldoran, he was not an indiscriminate killer.
It will help people accept it if they can think about sending Baldoran back to the mother to be made right. What made you think of it?
I don't know, Ayla said. But when I saw the dwarfed young man who came with Belladora's people, I knew that there was no medicine that could help him to grow into a normal size, at least none that I knew of. Then that little snake made me understand that there are some things only the mother could fix. If not in this world, then perhaps in the next.
Have you met the young man? Zelandani first asked.
No, not yet.
Nor have I, the first said.
Then let's do it now.
The three women and man walked toward the Giornadagni campsite. They stopped off at the Ninth Cave's camp and picked up Jondalar and Jonela and Willemar, the only ones who happened to be there. Belladora and Kimaran were at the camp with their children. Ayla wondered if Belladora's mother would succeed in persuading them to return with her and staying for a year. She couldn't blame her for trying. She wanted to get to know her grandchildren, but Kimaran was the leader of the second cave. The friends greeted each other with cheek rubs, and then they went through a series of formal introductions to Belladora's mother, the leader of the cave, and a few others. Then the young man came forward.
I wanted to meet you, he said to Ayla. I liked what you said about the snake and some of the people you know.
I'm pleased that you did, Ayla said, then bent down and took both of his small, oddly shaped hands in hers. His arms were also too short. His head seemed almost too big for him.
I am Ayla of the Ninth Cave of the Zelindagni, mated to Jandalar, Master Flintknapper of the Ninth Cave of the Zelindagni, and mother of Jonela, Blessed of Dani, and I am acolyte to the first among those who serve the Great Earth Mother. I was formerly of the Lion Camp of the Mamutoi, who lived far to the east. I was adopted by the Mammut to be daughter of the Mammoth Hearth, chosen by the spirit of the cave lion, protected by the cave bear, friend of the horses, Winnie, Racer, and Gray, and the four-legged hunter, Wolf. I am Romatolo of the sixth cave of the Giornadagni, he said in slightly accented Zelandagni. He was fluent in both languages. I greet you, Ayla of the ninth cave of the Zelandagni. You have a lot of unusual ties. Perhaps you could explain them to me sometime, he said. But first, I would like to ask you a question.
By all means, Ayla said, noticing that he seemed to feel no need to recite all his names and ties. Well, he was unique enough, she thought. He seems young, yet ageless.
What are you going to do with the little snake? Romatolo asked. Are you going to send him back to the mother?
I don't think so. I think the mother will take him when she's ready for him.
You have horses and a wolf. Would you let me have the little snake? I will take care of him.
Ayla paused for a while, then said,
I wasn't sure what to do with him, but I think that's a good idea, if it's all right with your leader. Some people fear snakes, even those that are not poisonous. You will have to learn what to feed him. I may be able to help you.
She reached into her carrying sack and pulled out the woven bowl with the lid tied on and gave it to Romatolo. Wolf was leaning against her leg and whining slightly.
Would you like to meet the wolf? He won't hurt you. When he was growing up, he grew to love a boy who had some problems. I think you remind Wolf of him.
Where is the boy now? Romatolo asked.
Rydag was very weak. He walks the next world now, Ayla said.
I am getting weaker. I think I will walk the next world soon, Romatolo said.
Now I will think of it as returning to the mother.
She didn't deny his assertion. He probably knew himself and his body better than anyone.
I am a medicine woman and was able to help Rydag be more comfortable. Can you tell me where you feel bad? I may be able to help you, Ayla said.
We have a good healer, and he has probably done everything that can be done. He gives me medicine to help the pain when I need it. I think I'll be ready to go back to the Great Mother when the time comes, Romatolo said, then changed the subject. How can I meet your wolf? What do I have to do?
Just let him sniff you, and maybe lick your hand. You can pat him if you like, and feel his fur. He's very gentle when I ask him to be. He adores babies, Ayla said. Then she added, have you seen the pole drag that the one who is first rides on? If you would like to ride on it and be pulled around by a horse, I'd be happy to take you wherever you would like to go.
Or if you need anyone to help carry you, Jandalar added. My shoulders are strong, and I have carried people that way before.
I thank you for your offers, but I have to tell you that it makes me tired to go visiting much. I used to love it. Now, even with someone carrying me, it's hard. I almost didn't come on this journey, but if I hadn't, there would have been no one left to help me, and I can't manage without help. I do like it when people visit me, though.
Do you know how many years you can count? The one who was first asked.
About 14 years, he said. I reached manhood 2 summers ago, but things have been getting worse since then.
The first nodded. When a boy reaches manhood, his body wants to grow, she said.
And mine doesn't know how to grow right, Romatolo said.
But you know how to think, and that is more than many can say, the first said. I hope you live many more years. I think you have much to offer. The three women of the Zelandania rejoined each other later in the afternoon at the travelers' campsite. The large gathering area was too busy. What had started out to be a meeting of the neighboring Zelandania had turned into an unscheduled summer meeting, and those who were cooking meals had taken over the covered space of the pavilion. No one else was in camp at the moment, and Ayla's sleeping tent was being used as a quiet place to talk. Even then they spoke softly.
Should the hemlock be served tonight, or should we wait until tomorrow night? The first said.
I don't think there is any need to wait. I think we should get it over with as quickly as possible, Zelandani first said, and the water parsnips should be cooked while they are fresh, although they will keep for a while. I have an assistant, not quite an acolyte, but a woman who helps me a lot. I will ask her to cook the hemlock roots.
Will you tell her what they are and who they're for? The first asked.
Of course. It would be dangerous for her if she didn't know exactly what she was cooking and why.
Is there anything you want me to do? Ayla asked.
You've done your share, the first said. You gathered the plants to begin with.
Then I think I will go and find Jandalar. I haven't seen him all day, Ayla said. When are we going to visit the sacred site?
I think it's best to wait a few days, after this whole Balderan matter is finished, Zelandani first said.
Balderan and his men had been watching both Ayla and Jandalar and the wolf very closely, though not overtly. It was getting dark and close to the time when the evening meal would be served. It wasn't officially being called a feast, but it would be a communal meal to which everyone was contributing, so it felt like a major celebration. Ayla and Jandalar weren't entirely sure where the men were being held. It changed somewhat depending upon who was watching them. They were deeply involved in conversation with each other and nearly walked into Balderan and his men. Balderan looked around quickly and noticed that the wolf was not with them. The men who were supposed to be watching them also seemed distracted and not paying attention.
Let's do it now, he said.
Suddenly Balderan jumped out, grabbed Ayla, and the next instant had a leather thong around her neck.
Stay back or she dies,
Balderan shouted as he pulled tight on the cord. Ayla gasped, trying to breathe. The other men had armed themselves with stones that they were threatening to throw, or perhaps use to hit her or whoever came after them.
Balderan had been waiting for this moment. He had planned how it would go in his mind, and now that he had her, he was enjoying it.